Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
It's definitely going to be different not having those matchups that you would expect every year.
Because the NHL drafts, like, 17-year-olds. The NHL has to tread the water really carefully. Like, they don't even have a goalie. Like, what is the draw? But going into this year because of the Seattle Kraken's expansion draft. But,
where is this going?
Listen, hear me out. It's going somewhere.
It's just not part of hockey. Like,
really looks like that weird dad I don't want me to pick up from school. Like,
welcome to Slapshot Sweethearts.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Slapshot Sweethearts. I'm back after a week being ill, so I'm very excited to be back with everyone, back in this chat room with Shannon, and we have an awesome guest with us today, Scott Burnside, amazing NHL reporter, super good coverage. If you guys don't follow him already, what are you doing? So excited to have you with us.
Thanks for having me aboard. It does feel, I talked to somebody this morning in the game, and it feels like this is finally the off season. It feels, you know, like the last two seasons with COVID and the bubbles and the shortened seasons. It feels like it's all been sort of jammed together. And of course, most recently with, you know, the expansion draft in Seattle, followed by the regular draft and free agency. I mean, training camp, I think it's 22nd of September, it is going to get on top of us in a hurry. So this does feel like that sort of pause where a lot of people in the game are, you know, sort of, you know, maybe taking a breath and, you know, sort of recharging a little bit. But as you guys know, the machinery of the NHL never stops. And so every day there's a little bit more news, and whether it's Marc-Andre Fleury agreeing to stay, you know, to show up in Chicago, I guess, for, you know, the Jack Eichel stuff that is still outstanding. There's still lots of moving parts, but it does feel like we're in that sort of low ebb, which I think a lot of people could use right now. So,
yeah, totally agree. Before we get into all of those big moves you just talked about, you mentioned, obviously, this is finally the off season. We've been moving and moving for what feels like almost 2 years. Like, what was that adjustment like for you going from obviously getting to be at games and going everywhere to just like isolation, Zoom meetings, all of that?
Yeah, it has been, it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge for everyone everywhere, right? That's the easy part of it. But for someone in, who's used to being in a locker room or having the ability to go and talk to a coach or a player or sit down and, you know, to have those kinds of relationships. And I'm no different than anyone else in the business that when you take that away, it feels strange. And it was a very difficult period of time in terms of, well, how do you identify stories that could or should be told? How do you reach those people? How do you share things with a readership? And, you know, until recently I was with The Athletic, doing podcasts and writing regularly, have done some broadcasts over the years. So how do you tell those stories when you can't be where you are normally at? So, you know, that was, I think it's been a real challenge for a lot of people. And even the, you know, sort of the social connection of it all. I think of, you know, some of my closest friends are people in the business, men and women I've known for years and years, and that you can count on encountering, whether it's at a draft or All-Star or the NHL playoffs or the finals or whatever, and you don't have that kind of contact, and it's difficult. And you know, it's a social business. And when you take that social interaction out of it, I think it has been a challenge for a lot of people, and it's been difficult, and it's been nice, you know, in recent weeks, I had a chance to go to Nashville. I was in Connecticut and spent some time with Spencer Knight and his family. I was in Minnesota for the draft and spent 3 or 4 days with the Minnesota Wild draft team. And to be able to have that kind of interaction is refreshing, and it's a reminder of why we do what we do. So, yeah, very long answer, but really, in the end, it sucked. And it's I just hope we're getting to an end of it, right? And I think I hope by next fall, maybe we're back to something that approximates normal in terms of how the game gets covered.
Yeah, so you did mention it. We're getting a little bit closer to normalcy. We did start to see it in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and especially toward the final when most teams were able to have at least some fans in the arena. Obviously, Montreal didn't get to until the very end, but Montreal being in the final itself was a little bit of a surprise. So what do you think, in your professional opinion, was the biggest surprise of either Montreal's Cup run, the Cup run in general? I know there was a lot of things that still weren't 100% back to normal, so lots to see there.
Yeah, no, it was. And listen, you don't want, we'll never hopefully go back to that kind of dynamic, but I think one of the most interesting things, you know, was the Canadian division, the North division, and how, as the season went along, the dynamic there was so different than everywhere else. And Shannon, yeah, as you mentioned, as time went along, more and more fans allowed into more and more buildings in the United States. And until the very, very end, none allowed in Canada. And if you, I mean, the players, it's just so, maybe it's just so obvious, but when you have 10,000 or 16 or whatever the numbers got to by the end, in Carolina and Tampa and Florida and all the rest in the United States, it's a completely different vibe. Yeah, players respond differently to it. Coaches respond differently to it. And I think, you know, we saw some good hockey in the North Division, and I don't know whether Montreal was able to take advantage of not having those fans and if that had anything to do with their run or not or whatever it was, but no, it was a great run for Montreal, and I think those kinds of things are important, and maybe that's what we'll remember of this, the truncated season, and maybe hopefully the last COVID impacted NHL season, is that we got to see the Montreal Canadiens in the Stanley Cup final and all that meant to that franchise. And, you know, lots of debate in Canada. Are they Canada's team? Are they not? I don't think one exists. That Pierre LeBrun and I have this discussion all the time. I don't think there is one, right? I think that people like to imagine that, but it's not the case. But I think that was obviously a huge surprise. And I, for me, just watching Tampa go back-to-back and just a credit to not only going back-to-back, which is almost impossible in the salary cap era, but to do it in two COVID seasons in a flat cap. And listen, I know people complain about Nikita Kucherov and the dead cap space, all that stuff. I don't care. That team is full value for going back to back. It's such a wonderfully built team. Julian Brisebois, of course, before that, Steve Yzerman doing a great job. And John Cooper, and I assume he'll be the head coach of Canada's Olympic team in Beijing. And it's just a really remarkable thing to watch what they went through, what they achieved in going back to back. So, and I always say, well, you can't go back to back because it never happens. Of course, Pittsburgh and Tampa have done it now in the last, well, 16, 17, and 2021. So what do I know? There you go.
Tampa, I feel like, unless you were rooting for them this year, they were the team that everybody loved to hate. I had a job interview and she was like, okay, please tell me who you're rooting for in the final. And I was like, never Tampa. Can't do it.
Did you get the job?
Yeah.
Oh, right, there you go.
Hell yeah.
And, I think you're right. And it's interesting. And I wonder if there's, you know, to me, there's a little bit of that with Vegas too, right? Because if Vegas didn't have to expose anyone in the expansion draft, didn't have to pay the money. And I think there's a little, you know, how come Vegas has it so good? But, oh, definitely Tampa. I think there were a lot of people hoping that there was going to be some cap karma against Tampa. And I will say, and not because of any reason, and they can thank me later, I believe I picked them to lose all four rounds. I just thought it's too hard to go back-to-back. I thought Florida might have a shot. Carolina was my preseason cup pick. The Islanders, I thought the Islanders, and they came this close. And then I just picked Montreal because why go against the grain? But Yeah, 0-4 against picking Tampa. So
I am Florida going all the way. My bracket was busted very early.
Yeah, I can relate.
Disappointed. Oh, okay. So let's go sequentially here. So we have the Cup. Tampa Bay goes back to back. Hate to see it. It's fine. But then we get to the expansion here. Vegas obviously is not involved here. What were the biggest surprises for you, whether from people being left unprotected or Seattle's choices?
Well, I think a little bit of both. And, you know, as we know, there were so many big ticket or high profile players that were made available to Seattle, and whether it was PK Subban or Vladimir Tarasenko and Jacob Voracek, go down the list. There were a lot more high end players available than when Vegas went to pick. And then Ron Francis really, I think, sort of turned the process on its ear, where I thought that he was much more conservative in the actual expansion process than I thought he might be. And then sort of turned and made a couple of, I thought, really astute free agency moves. And certainly, I know there's some issue with the structure of the contract, but Philip Grubauer was the key one for me, picking up Jaden Schwartz from St. Louis, Alex Wenberg. And now you can see, like, to me, that looks like a team that you think, okay, you already sense that they're going to be really hard to play against. I think Dave Haxtell is going to do a great job in his second go around as an NHL head coach. So that part of it was really different to me. And I think when you look at teams and the players they expose, I mean, the Carey Price is a little bit different for me, because I think Montreal felt that he wouldn't be selected, but still a gamble. But I do think there were players who were exposed where teams were sort of hopeful that Seattle would bite. And whether it's Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson in Nashville or Tarasenko in St. Louis, go down that list, it didn't happen. And now, and that's sort of created the ripple effect of what we've seen in free agency and, you know, what teams are having to do with the flat cap and $81.5 million, which is likely going to be the same for three or four years. So all of it was fascinating to see. I just thought Seattle did such a nice job. And even though a lot of the players' names had leaked out in advance, it didn't seem to dull the enthusiasm in Seattle. And I think that franchise is, they're going to be rock stars there. It's going to be great to watch.
And those jerseys are just chef's kiss.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so ready. Give me that Brittany Tanner right now.
You made a great point about, you know, a lot of the time in this expansion draft in particular, teams exposed players because they didn't want to keep them, not because they, you know, it was an opportunity for Seattle. And look, you mentioned Jake Voracek. I know that him and Philadelphia had already agreed that he wasn't going to be with them next season, just because, you know, his shelf life is up. His cap space is awful if you look at a frozen cap era. And there were quite a few different scenarios like that throughout the league where I think fans were like, oh, you're going to take so-and-so for me. And it did not happen.
Yeah. Well, and even, you know, again, and I think we waited for this after the, you know, as Seattle was making the, you know, confirming the players they were selecting, almost no, I don't think there was. There was single side deal. So none of what we saw. Right. Yeah. So none of what we saw with Vegas, where there were a million things and GMs bent over backwards, overthinking it. And, you know, whether it was Columbus or Florida or Minnesota back in 17, that I really do think GMs learned their lesson. And, you know, whatever Ron Francis tried to, extract from teams, he was happy to have the cap space and to move on to plan B if that wasn't already plan A in free agency. But we didn't see, you know, the mistakes made by GMs in 2017 repeated. And we probably shouldn't be surprised, but that was another part of it, that there wasn't, okay, or even, you know, for some of those players, well, I'll take, and let's just say Matt Duchene or Ryan Johansson, but it's going to cost you a first round pick, or it's going to cost you this. And those things didn't happen. And that's, it may have not have had that sort of sizzle on the day of the expansion draft, but I don't think Ron Francis cares. He's not going for sizzle. He's looking big picture. So.
Yeah, you could kind of argue they were doing some very conservative moves of not really making moves until this draft, and then kind of still being a little quiet. Like, I feel like Vegas came in and they were just like, hear me roar, we're Vegas. But yeah. Seattle's kind of like, we're going to try and fly under the radar. and you're just going to have to like wait and see.
Well, and I'll ask, like, I don't know what you think, but to me, the interesting part will be, well, which William, who's the William Karlsson on the Seattle team, or who's the player that might have been buried depth wise? You know, Yanni Gord's an obvious one, maybe from Tampa, but I think everyone understands he's an elite talent. But you know, is it Cali Yarncroc, or who comes up and has that 30 or 35 goal season, and you're like, ah, yeah, that makes sense.
What you did there.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Totally.
Well, you know, obviously then we had the entry draft, what was it, 48 hours later. The NHL really packed that week with a punch. Yes. And we had some great picks. Obviously now the Hughes family has three brothers in the league, two of which are in New Jersey. I know there's been a lot of rumors of people wanting them all to be in New Jersey, but Quinn is still in Vancouver at the moment. It was an interesting draft, though.
Yeah, no, and I think, and again, because there was so much fluidity in terms of what scouts had to work with, right? I mean, you had players who normally would have been playing in the OHL who went overseas, or they didn't play at all, or they had to, maybe there were no games. Maybe it was just, you know, a very tight focus on the kinds of things they were able to do on the ice. You know, the Quebec League had some, they had some games, but then they had COVID, so they had to narrow that down. And so it really was all over the map. And it was interesting, and having had a chance to spend a few days with the Minnesota Wild leading up to the draft, and listening to their scouts and how they prepared their list, I thought there would be a lot more, you know, like caveats, or if this happens, well, maybe we should go this direction. But their list was pretty rock solid, and it was an outstanding list that they put together. And so my sense of it, there's a lot of teams were like tried to block out that white noise of, I don't know, let's not, you know, what do we know, right? And I guess that's what it narrowed down to, what you know and what you believe given the information that you have, because your information is the same as everyone else, and then really stick to your guns. And I think that's what the good teams do. They don't go down a rabbit hole if things look different. And I didn't have a draft list. I don't know who any of these kids are for the most part, because that's not really what, you know, it's not sort of my thing. But it was interesting to watch. The Minnesota list was very true. They ended up taking the goaltender, Jesper Wallstedt, who they had in their top 10, fell to them. They made a trade, and I think they got him with the 20th pick. But, you know, that they stuck to their list, and that's how it went. And my guess is that's how a lot of teams, if they didn't do it that way, that's probably what they wish they could have done, is not get all bent out of shape. So
takes away all the sloppiness. Like, it's a bit more...
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Maria.
And I'm Mike. And we're
Team Ready. Black Hills Energy knows your home is where your heart is, so they want you to be ready.
It's all about keeping you safe, prepared, and making your home as energy efficient as possible.
Everything from how to weatherize your home to how to stay safe during extreme weather.
Be ready for anything. Go to blackhillsenergy.com/teamready.
Streamlined there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have the expansion. We've drafted who we've got. Free agencies here. We're in it. Last Wednesday, Wild.
I got no work done.
Shannon was literally Twitter all day, and I was like, oh, I'm busy. So what moves stuck out to you? I'm still upset. I'm a Marc-Andre Fleury forever fan. I'm livid, but I will digress. What is your big move stick out, everything here?
Yeah, I mean, there were a few, and it's interesting, you know, there was a lot of focus on the goaltending, right? Because the goaltending was zany, right? I mean, Peter Mrazek goes to Toronto, you know, are he and Jack Campbell the tandem that they need? Meanwhile, Freddie Anderson ends up in Carolina, and Antti Raanta comes from Arizona. Is that what they needed? A lot of people were shocked that the Hurricanes gave up on the Calder Trophy finalist Alex Nedeljkovic, who's now in Detroit. So there was a lot of movement there. You know, for me, I was really interested to see where the market value is for elite defensemen now. And I think of, you know, Dougie Hamilton, 7 years, $9 million in New Jersey. That's a big bite. And Dougie Hamilton's a really good, solid player. That's a big investment for the New Jersey Devils. But to me, it speaks to, all right, what are we building here? And that Devils team on the back end is a lot. Ryan Graves comes over from Colorado. They're bigger. They're going to be harder to play against. Seth Jones, one of my favorite players. He's such a treat to deal with, and so he's just so thoughtful and really an interesting guy. And you know, the deal he signs in Chicago after being traded from Columbus, and that's another big number as well. And I think, okay, Kale McCarr's extension. So I think that's what you're seeing now is, okay, where is the market for those defensemen? And I know we had JP Barry, who represents so many of the top players in the game, including Dougie Hamilton. And we were just talking about the shift in, you know, the money now spent on those defensemen, that and GMs are like, okay, we have to build this way. We have to build the blue line up. And it's probably taken away money from the goaltenders, right? I thought Philip Grubauer, I thought he might be worth more on the open market. And the goaltenders that we saw moved maybe were not at a price point that you might have expected, given how important the position is. But it's almost like, there's sort of a gray area of goaltenders. So we're going to push all our chips on those elite defensemen because they are elite. To, you know, Zach Werenski signing the extension in Columbus, another guy like that. So I thought that was interesting that the market seems to have really shifted in terms of what is the value of a cornerstone defenseman, and it's up here. And I think maybe before it might have been here.
Oh, so. Yeah. Last season was huge for that. Shannon and I talked about this all the time. Watch so many teams, and it's like everyone really wants to be quick to blame a goalie, like me included. Like, sure. I'm a Penguins fan. Like, I want to blame my goalie 24/7. But defense is something that really struggled last year for so many teams, and that is making them so much more valuable because you can't win.
Well, yeah, and I think I think it's always been that way, but it is, to me, it's like the pendulum, right? Do you need a franchise center? And if you go back and maybe historically after the Crosby draft, and you had to have that depth down the middle. And the Kings, if you go back to when they won the Cups and, you know, the Cups in 12 and 14, Pittsburgh's back-to-back going to the final in 08 and then winning in 09, you look down the middle. It's Crosby, Malkin, Jordan Staal. You think of the Kings and it's Andre Kopitar and the group that they were Dean Lombardi assembled in Los Angeles. And it doesn't mean centers are any less important now, but maybe it's like, okay, let's get a franchise goalie and let's pay him top dollar. And then you're like, wait a minute, it's hard to know if they develop, you know, they develop later. So let's now spend all our money on D. And I think that's, you know, in 2 or 3 years, if we do a podcast and it might be like, holy cow, right wingers are now making $9 million. It just may be that kind of pendulum. So,
yeah, I'm concerned as a Bruins fan. McAvoy is going to need some money soon. And looking at how Dougie Hamilton and Miro Heiskanen and Seth Jones are getting money, I am going to be flat broke in Boston.
I had Charlie McAvoy as he was my number one. He was my Norris guy. He was number one on my list.
At least the nomination.
I had no problem. I said, you know, we at the BHWA, the votes are revealed, so I've got zero problem with it. I think that's the way it should be. But I remember when Pierre LeBrun and I were talking about it on our podcast, and I can't remember who he might have had Victor Hedman. And I said, yeah, I had Charlie McAvoy. And there's this pause, and I'm like, I'm okay with it, right? You don't have to protect me. I feel good about that. So, but I think it won't be the. He's going to end up on a lot of ballots moving forward. He's a terrific player. And so let me ask you then, Jan, what did you make of the Bruins? I thought sort of an interesting late first day of free agency with the moves Don Sweeney made there and really addressing I thought, some important needs. What do you think?
Yeah, Don Sweeney has the tendency, or he did in his first few years with Boston, to wait and see what's available. And I think that that hurt them a little bit at the beginning of the day in free agency because things were dropping left and right. But he had been interested in Linus Ullmark all day. So the fact that he signed him, I did not think was a surprise. He traded Dan Vladar out so we didn't have too much goaltending on the cap. Now, I didn't like the Derek Forward signing at all. I think that was much too high for what he was paying Nick Foligno and Taylor Hall and his forward. He's paying far too much on the back end and not the front end.
Right.
So now he's got to figure out what he's going to do with Jake DeBrusk's contract if he wants to do anything else in free agency.
Yeah, I'm curious. And I'm a huge, I mean, I'm in a very large group, but a big Nick Foligno fan. And I know it's not, I just, you know, it was obvious that Minnesota was interested in possibly having both Foligno brothers, Nick and Marcus, in Minnesota. And of course, didn't, you know, I think my sense of it is if you wanted to go back to Columbus, that was, you know, a possibility. But
that's what I thought he was doing.
Yeah. But I like the fit in Boston and just the connection. He's an emotive guy, and I the connection to the community and with his daughter's health and how you know, he's been so supportive of the medical community in Boston. I don't know, maybe those things don't make any difference, and maybe it's just the media.
A huge locker room chemistry person.
Yeah,
it makes much more of an impact. Maybe it's just because I'm a Boston fan. I know that it's significant for them specifically. I thought they were in fantastic shape until the following day when David Krejci said he wasn't coming back, and now I think that's going to be a pretty large hit that Don Sweeney's going to have to figure out, losing your formidable second line center.
Yeah, but good stuff.
The cards will fall where they fall. But hey, that Dougie Hamilton move, Shane, you're going to come spend more time with me up in New York, New Jersey for that one.
Absolutely. So that's a good segue then. Scott, who do you think right now, although there are main pieces like Jack Eichel that have not moved, who do you think's winning free agency right now in terms of what they've been able to flip and what they've been able to improve on the back end?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's still... like, I'm really curious to see what happens with Jack Eichel. And, you know, we know the back and forth with the agents and Kevin Adams there. So, and I don't know, to me, it's going to be so hard to move him. So I think he's still there. I really like Dallas. Again, sort of subtle, you know, Ryan Suter gets bought out in Minnesota. You know, bringing in Braden Holtby, I think there's a lot of, you know, the goaltending situation there is very fluid in Dallas. Yeah. But to me, they're a team that they never got over their COVID outbreak early on, right? So they never quite got where they needed to be. And I think they're going to bounce back. I think Ryan Suter is going to be a really nice fit on a back end that is. There's just still a lot of work to do. This John Klingberg is going into his contract year, and we're just talking about defense. What's John Klingberg's number? Is it 8.5 or 9 or 8, whatever that number is? But Jim Neal will have to deal with that at some point. With Miro Heiskanen and Esa Lindell and now Ryan Suter back there, holy cow, Sakara, that's a formidable back end. And if
Dallas took a big gamble signing Suter for 4 years, that was a contract that was controversial for many teams, not because Suter doesn't have anything left in the tank, but 4 years will put him at what, 40, 41 years old. So
yes. Yeah. I think he's 36. Yeah. So he's such an interesting guy. And he was still eating up huge minutes in Minnesota at the end. So I, you know, that's sort of strange. I like Tampa, you know, the no cap space, still have to, you know, but to unload, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but to move Tyler Johnson to Chicago, you know, to find some pieces to fit in Corey Perry. I like Brian Elliott coming in as a backup to Vasilevskiy. I just, you know, for a team that had so little to work with cap wise, it's amazing to watch them work. And I know people are still bitter, but Julien Brisebois has done a great job there. And even though they're going to miss Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow, and they're certainly going to miss Tyler Johnson and Yanni Gord, that team, it's still, to me, you have to put them near the top of your list as, okay, who, on paper now, you know, weeks and weeks before training camp, who do you put at your top of your list? Tampa has to be in that vicinity, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, they have quite a bit of competition in Florida. The Panthers had a great trade deadline last year, and then they had a good subtle offseason signing what they needed to sign this offseason as well. So I really like Tampa and how they've been looking the last year or so.
Yeah. I'm all for the Battle of Florida. In fact, that might have been one of the most compelling playoff series of the bunch. And you know, what a great story, Spencer Knight, not just because I wrote about him recently, but, you know, coming in fresh from his college career and playing in an elimination game and giving up a shot in the first goal and winning that game and then playing well in game six. Sam Reinhart, you know, a terrific pickup from Buffalo, and then signing Sam Bennett to a, you know, an extension or he was an RFA, but keeping Sam Bennett in the fold after picking him up from Calgary at the deadline. Billy Zito has done a terrific, terrific job there. That defense is really good. I think, and I talked to Roberto Luongo about this, the relationship between Sergei Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight is going to be really important. But I think both those goalies, I think the dynamic's going to be really good, and it's going to be good for both of them, I think. And Roberto Luongo likened it to his own experiences in Vancouver when Corey Schneider came up and was really pushing him. And you can't, you know, unless you're Tampa with Andrei Vasilevskiy, you have to have a goaltender who can play 35 or 40 games. It's not 1 and 5, right? Or A and D. It's you got to have A and A1 or whatever it is. You have to have that tandem. And I think Florida has that. And I think that I like how I think they're going to push Tampa at the top of what I think is going to be the best division in hockey in the Atlantic next year. So I'm with you on that.
Oh, it hurts. But okay, I have to ask on a different side of things. We've brought up the media a few times. Are you optimistic? Are you cautious about hockey coverage moving from NBC over to ESPN and Turner?
Yeah, no, I think it's healthy. And this is, you know, I think NBC was important during the time, you know, they carried them, the NHL, you know, out of that. I know they had different names and different permutations, but basically, you know, sort of out of that 2004-05 lockout and coming in and solidifying the broadcast landscape, you know, along with it came the Winter Classic and the outdoor games and some of the signature events that became, you know, synonymous, I think, with NBC's coverage. And I think I like the idea, though, of something, you know, the fact that now you have two national broadcasters in the United States. I like the idea, and we see it with baseball and basketball, that sort of synergy of cross promotion. But also, you know, there's no doubt there's some competition between the two. Like, people will want to know, what do you think? Do you like ESPN's coverage better than you like Turner's? Or how will that shake down? And we've already seen with the hirings, some of the highest profile names in the hockey business or the hockey broadcast business have fallen on one side or the other of that broadcasting line. So I think it's really, I think it's important for the league. I hope that both sides are looking at, well, in some ways it is a blank slate, right? It's been a long time since ESPN had the games. Turner's never had them. Do something different, have some fun. Let's make sure everyone in the game is represented. And again, that, you know, cutting across all those lines that sometimes hockey doesn't do a good job at, let's make sure that these broadcasts represent everyone who wants to be part of the game. And it's a big challenge. It's easy to say, it's hard to do, but I hope we see that from both of them.
Yeah, the clean slate is something we talk about frequently. I'm a big basketball fan, so I watch, obviously, the coverage there. And a lot of, not that NBC didn't have this, but a lot of what makes basketball coverage successful is the personality that they have, you know, during intermission reporting or during pregame and things like that. So I'm really optimistic looking at ESPN and Turner, hoping that, obviously, hiring Kevin Weeks is a big step in that direction since he's incredibly entertaining to watch. Yeah. But seeing some of those guys take a different approach to how they're covering the games and maybe bringing in different people that didn't find hockey interesting prior, if they're watching a different way that it's covered. So obviously a great opportunity.
Yeah, I there are just so many really smart people connected to the game. We need to make sure that that lots of them have their voices and that there is an opportunity to say things that are important and not just do the cookie cutter. Like, to me, the biggest failing will be if we watch ESPN and we watch Turner and it looks exactly like we've seen from NBC for the last decade, then why that would be a disappointing, that would be a disappointing turn of events. And this isn't a slag against NBC, but let's make it better, right? Let's make it better or different. So here's hoping that that's what we see.
Yeah. We're so glad we got to sit down with you. I'm sure there's a lot more to cover before the season even starts. We'll definitely be chatting again at some point in the world. But tell everyone before we sign off where they can find you on social and where they can read all of your takes.
Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to look at my Twitter, remind myself of what my Twitter handle is. What is it here? It's, there we are. At Overtime Scott B. Yes, sir. You can find me there whenever you like. And call anytime. Always happy to chat hockey. There's truly no off season, as you know. So even in the off season, happy to chat hockey. And thank you very much for having me aboard. And let's see what happens, you know, come September. The great thing is there will never be a shortage of stories, never a shortage of things that are important to talk about. So I'm honored that you had me aboard, and call anytime.
Oh, 100%. And guys, you know where to find us in the meantime. All your hockey coverage, Twitter, Shannon. Stop it, Shan. Twitter, @SweetheartsPod. Instagram, @SlapshotSweethearts. You guys, that's no surprise to you. We want to click the same buttons all the time. We will see you guys again real soon. Bye.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.